Welcome to Nemeter. This talk is called Grail Keepers. And so we've got Saxon here. And the reason that we wanted to do this Grail Keepers talk with somebody else is so that we get somebody else's perspective, not just mine and not just John's. So what does it mean to be a Grail Keeper? So I'm going to put that question to you, Saxon. What does it mean to you to be a Grail Keeper, personally?
So the first thing, in order to answer this question, is to know what the Grail is. I think this is a prerequisite to being a Grail Keeper. And as I've come to learn, the Grail is the organic light, which is the indwelling aeonic presence in this experiment, in the Earth. So it's the Earth in her totality. That's the Grail. So in order to be a Grail Keeper, having a clear definition is paramount. And then from there, it's how I live my life within that knowledge, within holding that knowledge. And so the thing that springs to mind is I hold my life to a certain standard. And this is marked by various features, such as the way that I talk, the way that I hold myself, and the way that I interact, knowing that full well I am engaged in the Grail process and in the narrative itself. And, you know, a third point to add to that is the feature of responsibility. You know, I take great responsibility for being a Grail Keeper. And it's a responsibility of pleasure, and it's voluntary. In no way is it a responsibility of burden.
Or duty.
Or duty. No, absolutely not. So to take the opposite point of view, if I was to have the pretense of saying, okay, I am a Grail Keeper, I know what the Grail is, I live my life by the narrative, through the narrative, but I don't take responsibility for that, well, that's a non-starter.
That's right.
So I take responsibility, but I take responsibility with pleasure. And this responsibility leads into a commitment. And that commitment is to hold the story, but also to be an emissary for others. So I'm a vessel that carries the story, but I'm also an emissary who delivers it to others who are disposed, be they, you know, students who I have interaction with, or friends along the way who I may meet. So these are the fundamentals for me.
So it means to be a would you say, if I would dare to paraphrase your words, that being a Grail holder means to be both a vessel who holds that knowledge and an instrument of its transmission?
Absolutely, yeah.
So I'm going to put this question to you, Dan, but I field it to both of you. Would you say that in your experience so far, in the years of your engagement with the Grail, with the Sophianic vision story, the Gnostic message, that there is a certain sense of privilege that comes along with this engagement?
100%. Yeah, it's...
But not entitlement. Privilege, but not entitlement. I'm just thinking of that distinction for the first time as we're having this conversation here, because commonly the idea of privilege is connected vulgarly with a sense of entitlement. So you would agree, both of you, that there's a sense of privilege that comes in carrying the Grail.
Yes.
And I own that privilege. You know, I step into that privilege and I own it. But for not for one minute do I feel like I'm entitled to
what is it entitle
above
you
and beyond
to?
Anyone else.
Right. It doesn't know? Entitle you or elevate you beyond anyone else. But it is a precious commitment that you have, and it's a commitment that carries a sense of privilege. I myself feel hugely privileged. I've often said that by the position that I have in bringing the Grail to the world, bringing the Grail story.
I'm going to add honour to that.
And honour.
We were, Saxon and I were walking this morning and discussing this talk that we were going to record this afternoon, and the word honour came up for both of us. Privilege and an honour.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one thing that I might add that is a key factor in the story of the Grail Keepers, because we can say, here we are, three people today, talking about what it means to be a Grail Keeper. And we know that some of those who are listening also hold that role. They hold that with pleasure. They accept that role. Let us never forget that this notion of the Grail Keeper is not just invented out of the blue. It has a very long and deep history behind it. And so who were the Grail Keepers in the story that we carry? Well, they were the diaspora of the ancient mysteries who migrated from the Middle East into England and Wales, and they were the Grail Keepers who came to be defined and identified in the Arthurian stories and the Welsh and the Scottish and the Irish stories of the Grail, right? And one thing to remember about that story, they are our ancestors, as it were. We don't worship them, but we look back at them with reverence and respect. One thing to remember about their situation, which to me is quite important, is that the legends of the Grail place them in the wasteland. And one of the poignant aspects of their story, which I find repeated with us today, is that they have the greatest treasure of this planet. They hold the greatest treasure of this planet. And yet they live in a wasteland where it is very difficult for them to impart and share that which they hold.
Same as today, then.
And isn't that just how you feel today?
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly how I engage with it on a daily basis. I have this treasure of immense beauty and truth, verifiable truth. It's been verified on any number of occasions. And there is, we talked about it recently, this burning desire to share, which is the teaching process. So in my day-to-day reality, I just don't have this opportunity to do so because of the wasteland that we live in, because people are just not receptive. Occasionally, a spark may materialise, but the wasteland is certainly a theme that I've been running through my own mind recently. You know, the romantic wasteland.
For instance. The sexual wasteland. The educational wasteland, the cultural wasteland, the natural wasteland. Look at what the human species is doing to the natural world, which would be impossible for any human being to do did they have the recognition of the presence of the wisdom goddess in the world, in the natural environment. So that's our situation, just as it was for our predecessors. And I like to remember that. It's important to remember that, I feel. So let's go on.
What does it mean to you to be a Grail Keeper within Nemeter, the school? Because you're a person that's followed John's work for a very long time. You were an original G&E member. So now we've got this school, and you've been a Grail Keeper since you found John's work. It was instant for you. And now you're a Grail Keeper within Nemeter. So what does that mean to you?
Okay, so first of all, it's a material contribution towards the sustainability of the school.
So membership you're talking
so
about.
So as a member, okay, I contribute my subscription fee each month as a way to contribute towards the sustainability of the school, because I'm aware that, you know, the time period that we are in, this is a requirement for the growth and the development of Nemeter. So I'm, you know, clearly only too happy to pay that. And we were talking earlier on today. We went for a walk out in the country, and we're talking about when I was a kid, I went to Scouts, and each week I had to take 50p, 50 pence, subs. It was called subs for the, you know, for just
subscription,
for the subscription, yeah, for the general maintenance and upkeep of the, to be able to go to this place. And so for me, it's no different to that. You know, it's just paying your subs or playing for a football team. I've played football in the past. Each week on a Saturday, you take your £2.50 and you play your game.
Because ultimately, Nimita is about keeping the Grail.
Yes.
Isn't it?
That's one of its central purposes.
One of its central purposes is to keep the Grail. And for and as a place for Grail keepers, Grail family, to gather.
And to come together and work together. But because it is intended to be a real-life event, and the internet or IT aspect of it is just a portal, we have to maintain the portal. It's kind of like the launch platform, but it's not the vehicle that's being launched, okay? And, of course, that takes material resources. I was delighted when you brought this up because I was in the Scouts too. Mm-hmm. And I remember very well going off to the Scout meeting, which was given at this building, which was for the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the VFW. And it was an old World War II veteran who sponsored the Scout movement in Friendship, Maine. And I went off to the meeting with a little change jingling in my pocket, 25 cents, 35 cents. And as soon as we got to the meeting, we threw it into the kitty, simply for the material facilities so that we could proceed. And it's really the same thing. I'd like to emphasize, if it's not clear already, that there is no commercial aspect to Nemeta whatsoever as an educational institute, as an educational platform. It's non-profit, it's non-commercial. So everything that comes in from members or donations goes, as you say, to maintain and develop the school. Now, there is a profit facet of Nemeta. There is a profit aspect, which is Terma Publishing. So when we get Terma Publishing up and running this year, that will be for profit. So the object of Terma Publishing is to publish my books, to publish a manual of Planetary Tantra, to make various things available like the Kali Dice Oracle. And those projects are financial and are commercial, but they are set aside by a boundary from the activities of the school itself. I want to make that crystal clear to everyone.
So another thing that we were discussing was we are dealing in, you know, the time period that we're in, we are forced to deal with the banking mafia and the Zenosh currency. That's just a condition of our time. And so holding to the prospect that in correction we will be able to, I say we, those who are engaged in correction, and who knows, from other areas as well, will be able to come up with alternative ways to trade, alternative currencies. But as it stands, things need paying for in either dollars, pounds or euros. And that's just, it's just a fact of the matter. You know, but holding to correction that over time we can develop credit-based currencies as opposed to dealing within usury, which is what we're essentially doing now.
Right, yeah. I have great confidence in this. And I am sure that one aspect of correction, Sophia's correction, will be the correction of the financial system. And I'm sure that there are many, many people who are searching for other ways that we transact with each other free of this horrible tyranny and deceit of the financial system. But for now, this is how it works. Mm-hmm. It's only provisional. It's not going to be this way, you know, for long. So, to me, that's a positive prospect.
Mm-hmm. And you've got something that you'd like to say about the future of Nemeta as well. You're calling this a... it's a financial commitment that you're paying into for your education and to withhold the Grail Keepers. Uphold the Grail Keepers.
So, yeah, the word material contribution works two ways. Dialectical, you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a material contribution that I make so that I can make a creative material contribution. So a question that I have with regards to the future of Nemeta is how reliant is Nemeta upon fresh contributions from yourself? That's one question. And then beyond that, how do the students contribute new material through the methods that they have learned?
One, what you're saying here is so relevant because it ties in with a wonderful email that I received recently.
From a member.
Which I'm going to share with everyone, not just members, but subs of Nemeta. And would you read the one paragraph that's relevant to what we're talking about now?
Yeah, this is from Waltzing John. John, thanks so much for your email. It's wonderful. He says, once a lot of the members have familiarised themselves with the subjects and courses presented on Nemeta, the only possible problem I foresee is that then, effectively, they will be paying membership fees purely for new updates from JLL.
All right, this is really a good question. So currently, what do you have on Nemeta for members who pay? You have the units, which are being redeveloped and repackaged and customized for Nemeta. So some of the units are in raw form, the units being my previous writing in units. And then the blocks of those units is actually new because it structures and customizes them for the purposes of the school. So organizing the blocks is an ongoing job, right? Additionally, what members get is access to new and current material for me. So what he's asking is, well, what's going to happen when the members have familiarized themselves with all the blocks? And what I have to say about that is, remember that the Kalpa ends in 2216, and you will be lucky if you can do it by the time the end of the Kalpa arrives. If I may be so humble as to say so.
Well, that's something that you've said to me. Saxon, you've said to me, so you were somebody that's been reading John's work and a student of John's for a really long time. You also happen to work full time. And you said to me the other day when you arrived here that it's difficult to keep up with the new material.
Mm-hmm.
So not only is it difficult to keep up with the new material, I don't mean keep up with it intellectually, I mean just physically having the time to listen to it. And you always have to listen to John's talks a couple of times. But you also know all the material from it being on meta history as well.
Well, it reminds me of the teaching. Your thoughts are only as clear as your ability to put your thoughts into words. So, okay, you may be able to familiarise yourself with the courses and read and integrate, but until you can actually articulate and start teaching that fluently, can you say that you've mastered a course?
No, you can't. You cannot say that you've mastered it until you can put it out as if it were your own original material. One of the beauties of the Maitreya process is that it becomes your original material when you master the material. And you don't necessarily have to put it out in verbal form, although, of course, that's in the forefront because we are verbal creatures and we need to learn, but you can put it out in any form of art, you know, in painting, in music, in any form of expression that is suitable to you. But when you can convert the material that I have already produced into your own expression in any way, I would like to know. Send me a postcard.
From the edge.
So So, as long as I'm still here, you're going to get the units, the old material coming to you, but reframed, structured in the units.
I think what's going to happen as well, once you reach that level of mastery and an ability to disseminate it as if it is your own, through that process, you're then going to create your own original material from there.
Indeed, indeed. The originality that comes through this work of mine, which is unique and incomparable, is contagious and transferable. That is what handover means. That is what passage of command means. I explained before that passage of command in this unique adventure of Planetary Tantra means that you do not only receive the content of what I've done or the knowledge, but you receive the mastery of that knowledge. So that is an ongoing process, and your whole life will be committed to that. So as long as I'm still here, I will be reworking the old material, the previous material, and I will also be presenting original material. What I would like to see is a transition phase. I would like to see an overlap. That is to see what you have demonstrated in decoding the Andaman is original work, original mythophrenic work, you see? I want to see people bringing forth original mythophrenic work, because when I'm no longer here to bring the original mythophrenic work to Nemata, who is going to bring it there?
Well, that's a good place to bring up the future of the school. I don't want to segue too far off Grail Keepers, but everything's related, as it is with John's work. That ultimately we will be having student teachers teach in the school. So we'll have different departments, different faculties. So, for example, we've got people who work with the body. So they'll frame their bodywork within the Sophanic narrative. There's going to be at least two celesticians. There'll definitely be two celesticians. That's going to be attached to the school as well. So that's the future of Nemata. That's the future of grail keeping in Nemata.
Exactly. And it's such a simple and elegant system. This is the mystery school. This is how the mystery school is designed. There's no pretension about this mystery school. There's no, institution. There's no hierarchy. It's all participation that invites the natural gifts and talents of all who come here. I say teach as you learn is the motto of the school. Some of you may not quite have gotten the jive of that. You don't quite jive with it, jam with it, have the feeling. Nevertheless, that's due to simply to the fact that you are members, are student teachers. You're in the staff, but you're not in a particular department of the staff. Eventually, you are going to move by your natural disposition and talent into a particular department of the staff, through which you bring original material. So when we announce, for instance, Celestics in the spring, we're going to have two Celesticians putting their, first thing is going to be they're going to introduce Celestics, not me. And they're going to tell you out there in the student body what Celestics is to them and how it works. So they are defined as student teachers in the Celestics department. And that is true for every single department on this sheet of paper. And that's how it works. Mm-hmm. It's a self-propagating school that invites and promotes the innate genius of each person.
Could you clarify how the Maitreya process relates to being a grail keeper?
The Maitreya process is an educational event. I always like to go back to the Romantic mean. They called it the education of the human race. That was von Herder and another one whom I can't remember. It wasn't Schelling.
Lessing.
So von Herder and Lessing coined this phrase. And of course, we correct it to the education of the human species, because the species is propagates in a spectrum of races. So I go back to that meme time and time again. So in answer to your question, very happy to say once again that the work that has come through me totally devastates and trumps everything that comes out of Buddhism. There's a term in Buddhism, and it's a very highly regarded term. It's like a tulku, you know, Rinpoche. If I say, oh, Rinpoche, Lob Nog, Jang Yang, you know, suddenly everybody's on their knees in front of the Rinpoche because I said Rinpoche. Why? Because it's a term of reverence and honor. Don't revere and honor people for anything that they don't have. So there's a term of the level of a reverential name, which is Vidyadhara. Now, Vidya means wisdom. It's an exact cognate to Sophia. And Dhara means holder. So the Vajradhara is the holder of the thunderbolt. And the Vidyadhara is the holder of wisdom. These grail keepers in the Western tradition, which I represent, are the true Vidyadharas on this planet. And they prove it. They prove it. If you go to the Eastern correspondence and you say, here are the Vidyadharas of Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, what do you get from them? Nothing. They produce no original material, and all you get from them is a mealy-mouthed recitation, parrot-like, of platitudes about consciousness that are so tired that even a donkey wouldn't pay attention to them. You see? So this aspect of being a wisdom holder is both the specific role of someone in the Grail tradition and is the specific work of someone in Nyamata. And it is the specific action of the Maitreya. The Maitreya is never going to teach you anything about consciousness. I've said before, the whole teaching of that the Maitreya offers on consciousness, the Maitreya already gave. Do you want to have it again? No, it's said it once and it's done. You know, the three principles of Mayavada Vedanta and the non-attainment teaching. You can write the non-attainment teaching on the back of a fracking envelope. That's the only teaching about consciousness that comes from the Maitreya, from the world teacher. All the rest of it is the lavish abundance and richness of human intelligence. The Maitreya is simply like the coach who is orchestrating the explosion and eruption of the human intelligence, of the intelligence of our species. And it needs, the Maitreya process needs a vehicle. It needs a platform to do that. And that's what this school is.
And it's existential.
Totally existential. Mm-hmm. It's lived out. And it is shared person to person. And anyone can be it. But no one is it all the time. Because if I were to present myself as it all the time, I would be sitting on, you know what, not this chair I took out of the garbage in Gaussin, but some painted throne with silks and flowers in front of me, and I would be expounding the Buddha Dharma. And that is totally passé. It's meaningless. It goes nowhere. This original genius of the human species comes out of our love for her. And for what she has given us, for the intelligence that she has given us, the cultivation of that intelligence is an act of love. That's the Maitreya process.
I say, being a grail keeper in Nyamata is a place for the grail family today to gather. Okay, it's the portal for real life interactions, but that's where we're meeting our brothers from the mother.
It's a place where victory bonds can be seeded.
Victory bonds can be seeded and forged.
Yeah.
So how does it feel to you, Keridwin, to be a grail keeper?
In Nyamata.
In Nyamata. In Nyamata.
Well, it's a relief.
Yeah. Okay. Relief.
It's a relief because as someone that's in John's personal reality, his problem of handover was such a great problem to him, which had made him make a few errors along the way with choosing people to hand over to. And I felt like the burden, because it is a burden of not of being a grail keeper, the story, the narrative, none of that. Of course, that's not a burden. But the burden of John's actual material legacy. So the library, all the files, all the many celestics, drawings, manifolds we've got. I mean, the whole thing, it's massive. It's massive. And I suppose now that we've got somewhere to meet, us grail keepers, that burden has lifted for me because I know there's going to be other people. They're showing up. They're committed to Nemeter. They're committed to their education. They're committed to being a grail keeper. So there are others. I mean, there was always a couple of other people around anyway. And of course, you're one, Saxon, that I know would not leave me on my own to deal with that actual material legacy.
Well, also, in reference to that same question, I recall that you said to me a number of times about family. Well, first of all, the Grail family is actually a term or meme that we inherit in the Grail narratives. They are the Grail family, and they live in the wasteland on a high castle, separated from the rest of the world.
We'll do a talk on the Grail family.
On the Grail family. Mm. And the characteristics of the Grail family mirror today those in Nemeta and those in Planetary Tantra in general. That is to say that even though we're treasure holders, the question is, we live in a wasteland, how do we impart this treasure to others? But getting back to what you said to me, which certainly fits my personal reality closely. You said that there's the family that you have by blood, and then there's the family you choose. And the Grail family is the family we choose to be in. And having that family is a great relief because it is a wasteland of isolation, and everyone suffers from it. How many people have written us telling us that they suffer from isolation, and how can they connect with someone else who's in PT? And it's happening. It's happening. It's happening very fast. You know, bear in mind that I never promoted PT, did I?
No.
Never. And I don't even really promote it now. But it has a natural mycelium growth.
Hmm. I think that's the main thing, that my main concern now that Nemeter is actually up and running is promotion of the school to other people who aren't already in the school.
Yeah, and I want to bring that up for a moment. As regards to the finances that come in to run the school, part are for, you know, material costs, and part are to pay for the services, the people who work for the school. So we're looking to the right people to show up for certain services that we need, like text editing, video editing, and so forth. And certainly one of the services that we need is a kind of outreach or PR. Now, right now, we don't know how we're going to do that. I don't know how.
I don't want to know. And just do it.
You know, when it comes, it comes. But it is on the horizon. And in that vein, I want to say that I advise, as the founder of the school, that the school follow the policy that was stated years ago in the recovery movement. And that is to say, you promote by attraction. You do not recruit or do you not aggressively promote. So I would have Nemeta to be promoted by attraction and not in any other way. There's not an active recruiting into Nemeta or active recruiting into PT. That's not right for the process here. But how we're going to do that, I don't know.
That'll come.
Yeah.
The reason, to finish off, the reason that we wanted to record this talk on Grail Keepers, what it means to be a Grail Keeper, is because we've just come up to the first 3-month anniversary of the school's launch, beta launch. And John, you wanted to say thank you.
Yes, it's been a great 3 months, 90 days of Sophianic sobriety. And I just actually feel great. I really do. I feel encouraged. Well, you've seen the change in my morale. Well, some days. But really, fundamentally, my morale is improving hugely.
Yeah, you're way too happy.
Yeah, gotta watch it. Gotta watch that. It's not been my custom to be so happy. And just gaining confidence and just that great sense that you get. You know, sometimes you get the sense in life, it's like, hey, yeah, I know it's going to go right.
Yeah, this is it. It's amazing. And as you were speaking there, and as you were talking about the propagation, during the GNE was a period where that I suffered from isolation. So 2011 to 2014. And because I was alone in the story, there was people around me. No, I wasn't in physical isolation, but with this experience, I was going through great isolation. But the one thing that I held to throughout it all was, and it wasn't an if, it was when this breaks, it's going to be monumental. And that was something I held to and continue to hold to. And now I'm seeing it break. And being a part of it breaking is just it's an honour, privilege and a thrill.
Well, it's thrilling to me to hear you say that. And I know you have that feeling. I have that feeling. And the feeling, we carry that feeling. Who knows how many of us it is. And it's a growing. The feeling, it builds. Like I said about enlightenment, it's not just a high moment and then you live in the afterglow. It never goes away and it builds. And that's true of what we're doing here.
So thank you to the Grail Keepers of Nimitta.
Huge thank you. And in the conclusion, are we ready to sort of wrap up this talk? Because there is one thing I want to add, which I don't think we covered. We sort of did a rehearsal of this talk. Did we talk about the difference between knowing the Sophianic narrative, the fallen goddess scenario, and knowing the Grail legend? We didn't talk about that. So I'd like to discuss that for a minute, because I think that might be a point of confusion or uncertainty to some people. So in that vein, I'm going to put you two on the spot, and I'm going to ask you directly. First, I'll ask you, Caradwyn. Yes, you. Don't point to him. You hold both. You came into the Sophianic narrative, and as you've often said, when it gets you at the first hit. Did it get you at the first hit?
Absolutely.
You totally embraced it. It became the guiding myth of your life. And so you've been carrying the Sophianic narrative and growing with it for a long time. And you are, as well, deeply aware of the Grail legend. Who is Parsifal? Who are the characters in the Grail legend, some of which we may identify with? For the pleasure of doing so, we don't take ourselves too seriously there, but you could be a proxy of someone in the Grail legend. And how do you feel about carrying both those? Is there a difference in the way that... No, there isn't.
Not to me. And I happen to be somebody that went... with the Grail legend, the alternative Grail was probably one of the first things I looked at and devoured and kept devouring and still devour. So for me, no, there's no difference.
Saxon?
So the fallen goddess scenario is the myth of the planet, the all-encompassing myth. And the Grail legend is the existential seam, the golden seam that takes us into that myth. It's the legend that feeds the myth.
Exactly. That's right. The syntax you're using is essential, the difference between a myth and a legend. So the myth is really, as you look at it, the big picture, right? It's planet, the origin of the human species, the origin of the archons, the problem of the Zenosh, all of the elements of the big picture. The legend is an historical legend. So people can come into Planetary Tantra and learn the Sophianic narrative without necessarily going into the legend and engaging the legend. But my feeling is, to make it simple and to just cut to the bone, is that those who come to the legend as well then recognize a deeper level of recognition of the Sophia. And they recognize, and I'm going to use this word, that they are an elite force for her, for the earth. They are an elite force. And so it sort of brings to my mind a Sophianic animism, and probably it might be good to do a talk one day on Sophianic animism. So Sophianic animism, I would say, is kind of the quasi-religious genre for people who come to the narrative, but not to the specific Grail legend. So they can have the full benefit of the narrative and participate. They don't have to have that elite identification. It must be said that if you identify in the company of the Grail, you are in an elite identification. The Grail selects its own. It's highly selective process. And it's just sort of the inner core of the entire Sophianic vision. So as you say, Kriten, for you, they're one and the same thing. For others, they will not be necessarily so. So just wanted to clarify that point in closing. Is there anything else just to be said? We've covered everything.
No, I think that just about covers it.
Covers it pretty well. So yeah. Once again, from all three of us, a huge hug of gratitude.
A Gaian hug. A big Gaian hug.
Big juicy Gaian hug of gratitude. Right. We'll stop it at that point. Signing off.
Okay. Thank you.